Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. We just moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma today. And so this is our first day in this home, and we have a nervous dog. So you might hear Tashi. Tashi wasn't so sure. We were in Mexico 3 days ago. So you might hear my little dog, and my apologies for that. So she, her pronouns, this is Cree and Cherokee land where I am in the United States. And I'm getting a welcome to Tulsa. Thank you so much. So we're going to begin with a short centering. And take a moment to meet yourself on your chair, get comfortable on your cushion, on your bed. For some of you, the day is beginning. For some of you, it's ending. And with each breath, just drop in to wherever you're seated. Noticing what sounds. Here we seem to have a wind today and wind chimes. Here I have a blue dream of a sky around me. We're going to use Master Dogen's instructions on grounding. So, as we center, aware of the vertical energy that runs through your body, earth to sky. And this isn't just a trickle, this energy is more like a fat ribbon. Feel it in your feet, in the bubbling springs, the hips and shoulders. Aware of the earth energy that rises through us. Where I am in this moment, the earth is red in color. Just notice what you notice. Each breath, just relaxing even more. This earth energy helps us ground and connect with the earth. And with ourselves. What I often notice is that my heart just lifts a little bit with this energy and my shoulders drop just a little. Just notice what you notice. And the horizontal energy that runs through the sides of our body, aware of the side seam of our body. This is the energy that connects us to people, animals, plants, and minerals, and to each other. See if you can just tune in to that we are together as a sangha, as a community. That our consciousness brought us here to this moment. An unrepeatable miracle. Good, and relaxing even more, aware of the front and back sides of your body. You can tip with your pelvis just to connect into the back side of the body. Front and back sides fully connected. Good. And now settle into that. There's a whole body right where you are, right here. Notice what you notice. And just name it with kindness, not judgment or criticism or comparison, just noticing. Ah, yes. Relaxing even more, full body at rest. Nothing to do and no place to go. And I invite you to put one hand on your heart and one on your belly if that feels good. One of my teacher's mantras is, I have arrived, I am home. So I invite you to say that to yourself as you breathe in, I have arrived, I am home. Just settle in with that. Arrive, arrive, arrive. Arriving. Home. One more mantra, Mother Earth, as you breathe in and as you breathe out, here I am. Mother Earth, here I am. So as we come back together, I invite you just to rub your hands, get a little heat. We're going to send a little energy to our vagus nerve, And then rub your ears, starting at the top and down to the bottom, and right up towards the top, just making little slow circles with your fingers, with your pointer finger, breathing. And then making the circle the other way, again, breathing. Saying hello to our nervous system. With loving kindness. Okay, and then we're just going to rub the ears again, and we're going to give them a little bit of a pull, not to hurt, but just out this way. Just a little stretch, not hurting, just real gentle. Yeah. I'm going to rub the hands again. Get some heat. I don't know about you, but I'm getting warm. Cup your hands over your eyes, and we'll take at least 3 good breaths here. Feeling the warmth and the kindness. Letting the eyes just rest. Gonna move the hands over the jaw. And the heart. You can use the mantra again if you like. I have arrived, I am home. And then a hand on the belly and a hand on the heart. I always do a little longer on that one. Get them warm again. We're going to move the eyes. We're going to do it 3 times, so. Eyes. Hello, my beautiful eyes. And jaw. Kids I work with call this the oh my position. Oh my. Heart. One end on the belly, one on the heart. Mother Earth, here I am. Very good. One more time. Getting warm? I am. Eyes. Sending the energy of loving kindness. Saying hello, vagus nerve. Jaw. Heart. Heart and belly. And just lifting your hands off your body really slowly so you can almost not feel them leaving you. And then resting them. I've arrived. I'm home. And noticing what you notice with kindness. And gently coming back, and I'm going to invite the bell three times. Let me introduce my husband, Larry. Mi esposo es muy guapo y muy inteligente. That's what I learned in Mexico. Here he is.
Thank you, beloved ones, for being here. Your work in the world is more important than ever, because in the seeds of the Sangha lie the wisdom and compassion and talent we need to heal and transform our world, which is already happening. A poem for you before I go on. Every earth smile, every earth hug, every earth touch of kindness brings me home to myself. Please remember, I am the earth, and so are you. In a recent book called The Dawn of Everything, one chapter is titled, "We Are at the End of Humanity's Childhood." This is the transformation that lives in the butterfly garden. If you study and observe the journey of the butterfly in its four stages, in some cases five, depending on who did the analysis, it is a period of time where the butterfly is in the chrysalis, reforming itself. That's where we are. When you look at the backlash, so to speak, that's going on in the world, the anti-change that might be emerging, the old habits and old ways of thinking from a man's world in which war is simply honorable to be engaged in, whether it's necessary or not. These old ways of thinking and behaving are no longer necessary. We're in a shift that we cannot even imagine, because most of us really believe, I use that word with caution, really believe that things are not going to be any different than they are now. And that is, to me, a very sad state to be in. The liberation living in our practice is that we know life is impermanent, and that's not a problem. Things change, and that's not an issue. In the eight realizations of great beings, the first realization has to do with societies and political systems all passing away. They're all impermanent. And what we see in today's world, and in the worlds of the past, if we look back, is our human tendency to attach ourselves to what used to be. We have difficulty letting go. And that's normal. So don't think there's something wrong with you if you find difficulty in change. Peggy used to say, no one likes change except a wet baby. Everybody else finds this extremely difficult. I've been working with the elemental dimensions of practice, earth, air, fire, water, darkness, and light over the last several years. Part of my practice has been contemplation of the moon. And through some of our Native friends, I have learned that the month of March, every month has the moon named differently. But I came across a description of the March moon that I find very appropriate for this moment. It is classically called the worm moon, W-O-R-M. And people thought in the beginning that meant earthworms. No, it doesn't. It means this is the time of the year when the beetles that have been hiding from the winter frost and the winter wind start to come out to make spring bloom. We're in a moment of making spring bloom. I do not care what they tell you in our media system, which is the old structure, is the old mind, is the old heart. We are creating a world we've yet to fully imagine. In one of Native traditions, this moon is called, this March moon is called the Sore Eyes Moon. I like that. And it's, our eyes are sore because of the blinding rays that reflect the melting of the old ways. Our eyes are sore because what we have become comfortable with is no longer, in many cases, even functional. But we are attached to those functions. Our eyes are on fire with the surprise of how we are in the world today. Marches and protests everywhere, continent by continent, nation by nation. And in my observation, it doesn't seem to matter where people are in the world geographically. No one is satisfied with the state of the world today. This, to me, is a great indication that we have reached the end of humanity's childhood. I know for many of us, you know, high school and childhood was such a great time. It's supposed to be a great time in our lives, but it is not the future. We're supposed to graduate from high school. We're supposed to leave behind our childhood. I'm not talking about the inner child. I'm talking about our connection to the form of being human, in which we set our societies up to be run by parents and the rest of us act like children. It's a patriarchal model of family that we've extended to the whole world. That is not sustainable. And what we see on the streets, everywhere we look, Argentina, Chile, Kenya, Zambia, Yemen, I could go on, France, in the U.S., this dissatisfaction as our old systems try to still hold us in place. The women marching on the streets of Iran, for example, have realized that the structure of their society denies their humanity. This blinding light of this realization. You know, we grew up in a colonial framework of the narrative of superiority. That narrative is collapsing. And that blinds so many of us to the greatness of being a human being. So I am not concerned with whether I'm better than anyone, less than anyone, the same as anyone. All those kinds of descriptions of ourselves don't remotely touch the miracle of being a human being or the miracle of living on this planet with all the species and beings that we live with. The Sore Eyes Moon. So this butterfly garden, finding ourselves in the chrysalis, trying to figure out what the new form of our life is. I wrote an article just yesterday that said people are searching for new social ways of being. new social norms. And so we're seeing all kinds of behavior, weird and not so weird, because of that blindness. They called it the goblin mode. And I have to do more investigation on what they mean by that. But it basically means what we thought was real is not real. And so we're going to make up a new real. We're going to try things out we've never tried before. I want to try to give our minds and body spaces so that we can reshape ourselves. And this is a painful process. This is a difficult process. But if we practice well, we will find joy in our allegiance with the natural impermanence that is life. We have been conditioned. I'm encouraging everyone to reread Plato's Republic. He has a great section there on the cave, the allegory of the cave, in which people are strapped in and projected with images. And, you know, I see us that way. We have images of one another, that we are afraid of one another. We hate one another, and we don't even know one another. That's childhood-like thinking, childhood-like behavior. This is ending at the moment across our planet. Peggy mentioned the word self-regulation. For me, the very foundation of spiritual practice is learning to regulate our body and our mind. As we become more skillful in regulating our body and mind, we can add to our self-regulation stability and move easily into co-regulation, being together, listening together, crying together, creating together. A new world. I know we've all been conditioned to think otherwise of ourselves as individuals. And we're not enough. We're not worth much. We can't do much. Please do not believe that. My current example that helps me not believe that story about human beings is the Webb Telescope. 38 kinds of nations and nationalities participated in creating that marvel. That's co-regulation in action, and creativity emerges from that kind of awareness. Spiritual practice, to me, is the foundation of how we transform ourselves continuously so that we don't mistake whatever we create as the ultimate, whatever we create as a new society, as a new community, as a new way of connecting and communicating, also will have to change. You know, there's no need to fight over my idea versus your idea. Someone asked me once why my wife and I don't fight much. And we said, because we realize we're both wrong. and we realize we're both right. So what to do? How to spend our energy is the question. Where are we putting our energy? Much of the world is fighting the wrong battle. Thich Nhat Hanh gave a talk a long time ago in Plum Village, France, in which he said something like, he looked at the world and looked at how we humans are behaving right now. And we're like a group of chickens in the farmyard fighting over grain, completely unaware that in a few hours we will be killed. The earth situation is not political. The earth does not think in those terms, live in those terms. We are in a, somebody called a neuro-existential crisis. Our nervous system is full of trauma. Everywhere in the world. And we have the error of thinking only some people have been traumatized by colonialism. Everyone has been traumatized. And so part of our work in our spiritual life is to come home to our trauma, especially our unprocessed trauma. And by trauma, I don't mean weakness. I mean the destabilization of our fragile human nervous system, but fragile and strong enough to recover itself, strong enough to find resilience, strong enough to find healing in ourselves. And as we do that, we begin to see more clearly the metamorphosis, the great change that we are in as a species. For me, it's evolutionary. That's why it's so difficult to imagine it. We have forgotten the evolutionary heart of our ancestors that have gifted us with life, gifted us with centuries of being human. We tend to be attracted to folly. We tend to find ourselves seduced in a trance that rewards hatred, that rewards greed, that rewards ignorance. These are all things in social form that we must leave behind. This has profound implications for the future of our economy, not just our personal lives, though that is also at stake. It's a shift in consciousness that we are going through. Policies and procedures will not save us, because our policies and procedures tend to be old policies and old procedures for a consciousness that we are moving beyond. And so it can't hold that consciousness. It can't sustain that consciousness. It can't respect that consciousness. And so we find the chaos we have in the world at this moment. I've been using a term very old for what's happening right now is the birth of an anima mundi, a new world soul. And what I mean by that is not a separate self. I mean a new sensibility of what it means to be human on this planet with all of the species together. And that new energy, that new sensibility is creating a new social imagination. Our social imagination of ourselves on this planet in one way is pitiful. If you think not, just take one moment today or tomorrow and take a look at the faces of the children in Yemen who are just being destroyed by our silliness, by our greed, by our idea that there's something we have to be in control of, instead of something we have to love. So this change, this shift, requires of us as practitioners to go deep into the space of enlightened love. Not just People magazine love, but deep love. Love that, you know, we have a new dog, Tashi. You may have heard Peggy mention. He's a rescue. We found him in a cage after 3 months where he'd been captured off the street. And so we've had him about a year. And I woke up early one morning, real early, and he was staring in my face. Just like that. And I looked in his eyes and he looked in my eyes and I realized at that very moment, I was looking into the eyes of the cosmos. I was looking into the eyes of all creation. I was looking, in Buddhist terms, into the eyes of emptiness itself, impermanence itself. And that has shifted my understanding of what it means to live with Tashi. I now experience him as a profound living being, not simply a pet. That's human language. I'm talking about experience. not language in the first instance. So we are have damaged our rivers and our streams, not just people's lives. Over the last 500 years, there's a wake of damage that many of us want to deny happened. But we cannot heal unless we're able to admit what happened. It's just like going to the doctor and they say, well, you have this disease. You could pretend you don't. That does not, the disease does not hear that. It continues. And so we, many of us are afraid of the retribution of history. We need not be afraid of the retribution of history. We need to practice deeply so that we can receive our history, learn from our history in order to transform the future of our history. We don't need to be victims to anything. We are powerful beings, but we've been convinced we are simply material beings. I want to remind us that we are energetic beings, not simply matter. And once we start to understand and practice to be able to be our full energetic selves, boy, oh boy, what we can do. So this is not about linear change, this metamorphosis. It is about change that happens in the present moment. When our energies meet, when our energies meet one another with wisdom and kindness and deep listening and caring, when our energies meet the mystery of life itself, when our energies meet the beauty that is in every moment of our lives, a possibility to touch and be touched by. This melting snow of the past. Do not fall into the habit of hating the melting snow. It just melts. You don't have to do anything about it. The old ways are already passing away on their own. Put your energy into the new, into the fresh education system, the fresh ways of thinking about community. We already are starting to do this in small ways with our diets and blah, blah, blah. But again, back to Thich Nhat Hanh's point, we can fight over the grains in the ground of the farm without looking up to realize the farmer's coming for dinner. And so please pay attention to the everyday mundane life that we all have, but interject it with the spirit of a pure heart. Interject it with enlightened love. Whether that's gardening in the moment, cooking a meal, cleaning up, caring for a neighbor, holding the hand of a child. But we must. Many years ago, I had a chance to work on a project in Nairobi, Kenya, when AIDS was at its peak. And an AIDS camp was being built next door to the community development project my community had established and was working on. And one of the, I was invited to go to the AIDS camp, and I'd never been to one. And I walked into the entrance with a little obvious trepidation, and a mother came up to me and wanted me to hold her child. I took a breath and held the child. And the child held me. So many of us are hurt, damaged, wounded, and uncared for. This metamorphosis, this coming into adulthood, is coming into caring for all, not some. Caring for all. What would it mean? I said the other day, I'm about to stop because I'll keep going. I have a Baptist preacher's background, so I can, you know, go on here. But we forget there are 9 billion people on this planet. And we have no idea of the talent, the genius, the heart, the love, and creativity that's going to waste at this very moment. I'm convinced if we can begin around our planet to to consider, to care for, to raise up. Great quote from Booker T. Washington. If you want to raise up yourself, the best way to do that is to raise up somebody else. What if we raised up 9 billion people? My. I don't think we can imagine the talent and the creativity that is there laying to waste right now. That need not be, is what I'm trying to say. And I'm not looking for some big anything to solve our problem. I'm looking for myself to be more kind, myself to be more loving, myself to learn to listen more deeply to others and their suffering and their pain and their ideas of solutions and how we might be together in wellness, not just individual wellness, but collective wellness. We have a mental health crisis around the world. Suicide rates are going up everywhere, not just going up, they're going down in age. 5 and 6 year old children are now killing themselves. Does that not communicate something as not right? Not well? The matter of justice. Denied. Postponed. We all know we cannot live like this anymore. The people of Haiti are crying about this and have been for hundreds of years. All the money they paid back to France for being enslaved. This way of being in the world cannot be tolerated any longer. And it's not up to an institution to solve our problem. This problem. It is up to us as individual citizens of this singular, blessed planet. So my comment here is that we need to heed the call of the alchemist. And what the alchemist, ancient, you know, to turn metal into gold, we need to apply that image to turning our suffering into healing. Turning the destitute and downtrodden and lost into the magnificent human beings they were born to be. Nothing less than that is worth our lives, worth our energy, worth our vocation in this world. But this starts daily with our practice, with our meditations, guided or solitary. It starts with our chanting. It starts with creating space inside of ourselves large enough to hold the transformation. And I know that space is available inside of me, and that's how I know it's available inside of you. I want to end with, I've been perplexed about what poem to end with here. I want to remind you the spiritual practice is how we get beyond thinking the world is what we see. We don't see the world the way it is. We see the world the way we are. And so we practice so that we can touch our own happiness, our own wellness, our own deep sanity. And as we do that, the world becomes more happy. The world becomes more sane. Thich Nhat Hanh likes to remind us that every time we experience a sense of wholeness and mindfulness and caring and love, the world has changed because of that, because we are the world. We are not separated from other beings. Even we've been taught that. In science, we've been taught that. In sociology, we've been taught that. We're all separated. We are not. The energy of a human life is not contained in language. I spent time in India a couple of years working in village work where I also was introduced to Buddhism, and Gandhi's energy is still there. I went to a village I had never heard of, and on the entrance, there's a statue of Martin Luther King in a remote village in the middle of India. We must understand that our energy of love and care and justice and peace can go far, far beyond our little bodies. Our dear teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, just passed away. But he did not go far. We must understand that about ourselves, because we also know this is true about other people, other minds, other ways of thinking and other ways of being. So it's important to take care of ourselves. Be kind to ourselves. I know it might be difficult. I know that some of us feel periodically just hopeless. You watch the news too much. Or we don't watch it deep enough to not be trapped in the stories that we're being told. Learn to create your own story about our world. Learn to create your own story about humanity. Learn to create your own story about what it means to love and to care and to know this is so far beyond any institution's capacity. Human consciousness moves faster than institutions. And so institutions always lag behind human consciousness. It's not a fault, it's just the way of history. You can read a book and have an insight and want to do something different the next day, and you try to put that in practice in the institution. I used to do business consulting and with big companies. Same issue. Somebody would have a great idea about a new product or a new process or a new way to do thing, but the time it got through all the structures and decision making and all the people who had to agree, it practically lost its vitality. There's a book I want to recommend. I could recommend many, but one of the key books for me right now is Carl Jung's book called The Undiscovered Self. He was asked in an interview after his journey through concentration camps, etc., what might the future of the world hold? And he said, roughly, the future of the world will hold whatever it is in ourselves that we hide from ourselves, the shadow, whatever we don't come to terms with in ourselves will dominate us. We are stymied by fear. You know, fear we have is a biological phenomenon, but in our world, we have learned how to, in a sophisticated many ways, to create fear amongst ourselves and between ourselves and in ourselves. Nina Simone once said, when she was asked, what did freedom mean? She said, freedom means non-fear. So for me, the practice of the Buddhist path and other paths as well are about cultivating this energy in this space of non-fear. And once we find ourselves in that space, all kinds of possibilities become possible for us. Individually, all kinds of possibilities become possible for us collectively. And this, I know, is a journey of learning to trust and practice. But this trust and practice, our whole future depends on. The future of our children depends on it, and their children depends on it. You know, the earth doesn't have to have us. We are guests here for a short time. Why would we not do something magnificent and glorious? In my old church, there used to be a man on Sunday who halfway through the service would start running up and down the aisle, and he would just shout, glory! and then he'd go sit down. And one day, I was young, and you know, as young people, what was that? I asked my parents, and they said, well, he was happy to be here. He realized how happy it was to have a life. And when I think about how happy I am to have a life, and I turn and look at the world I am in, I cry every day. But I practice to use my tears to put out the fires of grief, of hatred, of despair. So it's okay to cry. There's plenty of suffering in the world that needs to be acknowledged and respected, cared for, and transformed. And I know that's the work you're doing. I feel honored to be with you on this day, at this time, under the moon of sore eyes. But remember, the eyes are sore because of the blinding light of the sun of spring. We're in spring, people. So many news stations around the world, which I check in every day almost, have used the word apocalypse to describe this moment. Well, apocalypse from the New Testament doesn't mean destruction. Apocalypse means revelation. Apocalypse means things that have been hidden are coming into view. We're starting to understand. And isn't that not true for this moment in time? The butterfly garden. Trust your transformation. Oh, I keep coming up with stories. One more. We fear this transformation time we're in, naturally, but some of us go to extremes. And Kafka wrote a book called Metamorphosis, a play called Metamorphosis a long time ago, about a salesman who went to sleep and he woke up as a bug. There's so many of us who are afraid of what we will become in this change we're going through. What will become of me? What will become of our society? What will become of how I work, how I earn a living, how I take care of my children? These are all very valid questions. Some of us here were having a conversation last night about the impact of artificial intelligence. Some of us are just now realizing what that could do to our lives, to our understanding of what it means to be human. So not just hold on to your humanity. Create the new understanding of what it means to be human. Profoundly, deeply. So that we are not simply robots of technology. Masters of technology. We must master our heart. Must master our mind. Technology by nature will evolve and grow. But if our hearts and minds don't meet the challenge of keeping pace with that, we're setting ourselves up for a dire future. This is part of our metamorphosis journey. To grow our hearts as wide as the world, and our love that transcends time, so that we can repair the world we have, heal the broken hearts. But concretely, in my life, I've dug wells for water, built preschools for children, built gardens in neighborhoods, painted houses. This is all concrete stuff. So if you're wondering what to do, pick something simple and go do it. I know you already are. Thank you for that. Take good care. Blessings. And I'll take any questions you may have. Not that I have any answers, but questions are great.
Dr. Larry Ward, one person wanted to hear the poem, and we do have a hand here by Victoria. Would you like me to bring her on screen with you?
Sure. Hi, Victoria.
Hi, thank you for that. But please do read the poem. I'd like to hear it too. And
okay.
Then we can share after that.
Well, it's not one of my especially uplifting poems, but it is a poem that emerged last week as I was contemplating what's going on in Ukraine, contemplating what's going on in Yemen, and all other, and China and the US, and et cetera. This came, poems just kind of happen, and I try to write them down when they come by like a cloud. But we watch from a safe distance, over the horizon, or out of the window bay. We cannot see there are no other places anymore. The mind maps which define us, we think are real, obscuring the earth from its true presence. We watch safely from on-screen trenches, the suffering unfolding all around us. We see little else, as it is not real, not our problem, not realizing we're only looking in the mirror. It is our own blood poured into the ground, the blood of our children and ancestors before us. We are caught in this game, this ancient game of maps, this ancient game of conquest, of pride and control, of power over. Every move on this board costs thousands of lives, both seen and unseen. The guilty and the innocent are buried in the same sands of time. Humans and our dangerous toys are in a very dangerous game. The biggest and fastest toys win the game. No one can count the deep damages. We don't have metrics for that. But there are only so many moves on the board. It's 90 seconds to midnight. It's 90 seconds to midnight. It's 90 seconds to midnight, or 90 seconds to daybreak. It's up to us to heed the alchemist's call to make value where there is no value, to make love where there is no love. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
So now I'm that gave me chills. Now I have to try to get my equilibrium back.
Okay, that's good.
I'm a great I really love Thich Nhat Hanh, and I had the great good fortune I live in California to
okay.
have been on a retreat with him for artists. I'm in the
oh platform. Yeah. Wonderful.
And, I'll never forget as long as I live. I learned so much just in the space of 3 short days. So I want to bow to that whole beautiful tradition and
thank you.
Acknowledge his great legacy. I'm curious, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but I'm very interested and involved in interfaith dialogue and ecumenism. Thanks. So I just would love to hear from you a little bit of your own story, whatever you feel like you have time and inclination to share with us today, in terms of how of your like your early years, how you were raised, and then how you found Thich Nhat Hanh and how your path metamorphized into where you are now, because I know it also included academic studies and religious mm-hmm. studies. And so I would just love to hear some of your wisdom with that, that I can maybe apply to my own studies and my own dialogue with people from different backgrounds. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, a quick note. I'll try to make this short. First, I was adopted when I was 8 months old by a loving family. And that's, I was told I was abandoned and found in the hospital the first 8 months of my life. But which I think is where I learned to practice solitude. not as an enemy, but as an intimacy. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, lived through the riots there before Martin Luther King was assassinated and on the day and weekend that followed after his assassination. And my mother said to me, "Oh, you just started talking. You hadn't had said anything until that event." And I said, "I didn't have anything to say. But I found my voice because of that tragedy and decided to make my voice a part of other people's lives." I then spent 25 years on the faculty of the Ecumenical Institute, based in Chicago, started by the World Council of Churches in 1954. So I worked in training theologians, pastors, and local congregations in efforts to renew the church, both theologically and practically, meaning trying to get people in churches to understand the church was not the building. It's people and their love for what's outside. I met Thich Nhat Hanh thanks to my wife. We went to a retreat in California many years ago. Well, over 35, 40, almost 40 years ago now. But and I knew about him through Martin Luther King. I'd heard about him. And I knew he had gone through untold suffering in Vietnam. And when he walked on the stage in a state of such peace, I thought, well, now this is somebody I'm willing to practice with. He embodied his peace without denying suffering. And that really touched me. It continues to help me, hopefully, be a better human being. And so it inspired me to go on to get a PhD, study more about Buddhism, because it was so transformational in practice. Though, you know, I've studied all the doctrines and Pali and Sanskrit, all that stuff, but, and there's great stuff there. But many people don't study, and that's fine. But I have always been kind of a study kind of guy. In the sixth grade, for homework, we had to do a home economics practice, something at home. And so I said, well, you know, I already know how to cook. My grandmother and mom taught me that. Said, you have to come up with something. So a week later, I came in with a paper on the laws of probability that I wrote. My teacher called my house. And then the next thing I knew, I was in the office with the principal. "Where'd you get this?" And asked my mother, "Where'd he get this?" He said, "He's always coming up with stuff up in his room." So I've always enjoyed learning. I'm committed to keep learning from many different disciplines so that I don't get locked into one way of thinking without being mindful of it. And Peggy and I, years ago, talked to Thich Nhat Hanh about starting our Lotus Institute. We wanted to focus on something for lay people and to bring the Buddhist practice in new ways to the world. Yeah, and so that's what we're have been doing our best to do. I hope that helps a little.
Beautiful, yeah. Can I ask where you did your PhD studies?
Yes, I did it at the University of the West, the first accredited Buddhist university in the United States. Wow. It's located in Rosemead, California. And it was started by the Po Guan Shan Buddhist Order from Taiwan, whose mission, similar to the Jesuits, was an education mission. Mm-hmm. And so they've opened universities in different parts of the world. But the reason I chose that one is because everybody who taught there practiced. Mm-hmm. So we had an Islamic professor of language who practiced Islam. We had a Buddhist professor who practiced Buddhism. We had a Christian professor who practiced Christianity. And so it was practice driven. And so I didn't, you know, I could read, So I didn't want to go to a place where I just had something else to read. But people who really could who embodied and who are learning from their own tradition without denying it. And so that's where I did my studies.
Beautiful. Yeah, I know in a Episcopal, well, she was the presiding bishop of the United States for a while, and she used a beautiful, she used the word incarnational about experience because she was the first American, well, the first woman bishop anywhere in the Anglican Church. And she said that to convey one's spiritual beliefs requires an incarnational experience so that people are convinced it's not through words or doctrine. So thank you so much. That's really beautiful. I hope to hear more, but I know there are others that want to talk to you. Okay. Thank you. Beautiful.
Thank you. I hope I didn't scare people off from questions. Are there any more?
I have another one if nobody's raising their hands. Oh, someone's asking in the chat about your dog. So wait, can I just ask one more quick question? Do you still have a good relationship with Christians, or did you find that people that some people were disappointed that you moved in towards Buddhism? What was that like?
Well, to me, it hasn't been an issue. And that's the question I get asked the most when people find out I spent so many years, which I still am, a Christian minister and a Buddhist Dharma teacher, a Buddhist minister at the same time. And people ask, what about the conflict? There isn't any conflict. The reason there isn't any conflict for me, when somebody asked me, I was just at Davidson University 2 weeks ago, Peggy and I were, a Presbyterian school, and I was being interviewed. We were working with the chaplain program. And they wanted to know, how could you reconcile this? And I said, well, it's not hard. Understand Jesus, and you'll start to understand the Buddha. Understand the Buddha, and you'll start to understand Jesus. Not all the stuff that came afterward. You know, there's always all the rigmarole that comes after great people show up in the world. But go to the source and see what was taught there. And see if that speaks to your body and your mind. And it still does. So I don't find a problem that way. But there are always people who are like, how could you, why would you? Well, I don't have time to answer the question of so many people's minds. All really, if you don't practice, it won't make any sense. The same with Christianity. Put it into practice.
That's beautiful. And that's exactly what Thich Nhat Hanh taught too.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Ward, there's a question in the chat and two people with raised hands.
Okay.
What would you like to do next?
Raised hands. We haven't had one of those yet. Let's do that. Please. Lovelies, how are you?
Hi.
Hi there.
I've been following you since I met you at the gathering of Black Buddhists years ago.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I noticed in the various teachings that you do on Zoom that you seem to be in different places. Like I just heard Peggy say that you guys are now in Tulsa.
Correct.
And the last time I attended, you were in Mexico. And
that's
I think
correct.
Prior to that, you were in California. So my question is first of all, thank you for embodying this teaching in a way that makes it accessible to so many of us that might not be as open to hearing these teachings.
Thank you.
And but I'm wondering if Lotus has a home. Is there a place where the Institute is located, or are you in the tradition of Jesus and the Buddha taking this teaching all over the world and with your...
I seem to be in that path of, because before California, we were in Thailand. So I seem to be in that lineage of going outward. So Lotus right now is virtual. Peggy and I once started to build a center, a small one.
Twice we did.
And in the middle of whatever we were doing, we get a call from Thich Nhat Hanh that says, I need you with me in Korea. And so then it's like, well, that's not going to work. So we don't know what's going to happen next for us. Having just arrived here in Tulsa, we know the history. We have great friends here. We've taught in Oklahoma with indigenous peoples and others for almost 20 years. And so we're waiting to see what happens. If you have an institute, you have to take, if you have a building, you have to take responsibility for it. And that costs money. So we've been with the pattern of making it accessible without having to pay rent, yeah. Which makes it more accessible, mm-hmm. at least for us. So that's kind of where we are, but who knows what can happen next? Thanks for that wonderful question.
You're always welcome to come and visit us on Whidbey Island.
Oh, really?
Word on the street is you used to be here. Is that
That's
true?
Correct.
All right.
That's
well,
correct.
It's changed a little bit since.
All right. So I can maybe, do that.
So come visit sometime.
Okay, I just got an invitation to do some work with a group, an artist group I've worked with before on Vashon.
Oh, nice.
Called Open Space.
All right.
And I've been involved with them.
Kind of.
Great people, great programming. And so I just turned down a trip there because I'm doing some health stuff here. Mm-hmm. But would be a possibility.
Okay, well,
await your arrival.
If you're ever in this
send me an email.
There are a lot of Buddhist people here.
I know.
And some serious Buddhists.
I know that too. So send me an email to Lotus.
We're going to send you an email after.
Okay, we'll see.
We're going to send you a letter to Lotus.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you so much. Take good care of yourselves. You're so beautiful. I mean that. They didn't pay me to say that.
I'm a reflection of you, my brother.
Okay. Thank you, sister.
I'm going to bring on Jillian, too.
Okay.
Hello, Dr. Larry, and hi to everybody from Ngarrigo country in southeastern Australia, in the snowy mountains of southeastern Australia.
Wow.
I'm so, so, so happy to be here with you this morning. What an amazing experience, and one that I'm finding deeply comforting. My question, Dr. and I'll just say now, my signal's a little bit unstable because we have storms here in the mountains, and so if my screen freezes, then please just move on.
Okay.
It could take a while to unfreeze. So my question is, for a long time I felt looking at, I work a lot in environmental activism, and for a long time I felt a really deep sense of despair about what is happening to our planet, to the species on the planet, not just humans. And I continue to see it as a something that's been being perpetuated by humans. And so I kind of came to a landing on that a while ago and thought, well, I think what I'm seeing is the end of our species. And I'm not so sure that's such a bad thing. And so I didn't know then what to do with that. And I guess I came to, well, whatever I can do to help leave, in my own little way, to help leave the planet in a way that's going to be at least sustainable for some species, then that's what I can do. And so I do that. My question to you is, you know, have you experienced that sense? You know, looking, you obviously look around you and see all the suffering in the world, as I do, and as I think many of us do. And how have you come to where you've come to, the landing that you've come to, in that it's not the end of our species, it's the, you know, it's a sign of the transformation or evolution of our species?
Well, my simple practical answer is I begin every morning with a meditation before I get out of bed, because I realized long ago that once my feet hit the floor, I started moving into habits. Mm-hmm. So I decided, into busyness, into projects, I decided to stay in my bed and rest a few minutes in meditation before I engage myself. And I do, in Buddhism, what's called the five remembrances. Mm-hmm. And I've done this a very, very many, many years. The first thing I remember is I'm of a nature to grow old. Mm-hmm. I can't escape growing old. Second, I remember I'm of a nature to get sick, have ill health. I can't escape that. Third, I remember I'm of a nature to die. I cannot escape death. Next, everything I love and everything I cherish is of a nature to change. And I cannot avoid the experience of being separated. And the fifth remembrance is I am the ground of my action. And that has two parts. One is I will inherit the consequences of my action, though I think consequence is not the right word. I think that's a misinterpretation. So I will inherit the continuation of my action. So whatever it is I do in the world will continue to be done. But it also means that I can choose not to be victim to growing old, to getting sick, to dying, and to experience loss. I don't have to be a victim to that. And I was practicing this every morning for about 10 years. And then I realized that's true about everybody. And then I realized 10 years later, that's true about every society. But our societies don't have a way of practicing. Only us as individuals have a way of practicing. And that's why our practice is so important. This is what keeps me basically stable in the midst of being in touch with suffering every day, which is part of my vow, is to be in touch with the suffering of the world every day and all species in that suffering. And then I do a meditation every night. I do 108 breaths. It's a Tibetan meditation I learned many years ago. I count to 108 breaths and I go backwards. And that helps me wake up and go to sleep with a kind of clarity. So I'm not just run around by my mind. And it's the nature of my mind to be disappointed. And every time I see the news, Peggy will tell you, I have moments of fury. In my body's response to what I see and I hear that I consider to be unwise or just plain hateful. And I don't see any necessity for that. And because I don't see any necessity for that, I don't see any necessity to hate you or the world I'm in or my neighbor or anyone else. I just don't have the space for that. Martin Luther King said, I'm not giving up on love because I discovered hate is too much work, something like that. And this is what I discovered too. And then I studied trauma resiliency training. And so I have many ways of regulating my nervous system. And, you know, this is ancient stuff our ancestors knew how to do and did, whether they were conscious of it or not. But music is very important to regulating your nervous system. There are neurons in our brains that are designed just to hear music. Dance is a powerful regulator of our nervous system. Poetry is a powerful regulator. Friendship is a powerful regulator. Going outdoors every day. My old friend Angelus Arian used to say, spend an hour a day outside the house if you want to be well. So there's lots of little things that I do every day. I don't wait till I have a crisis. So I'm kind of preventive. So build capacity for yourself. Build a reserve of wellness so that when you feel unwell, you can take it to the well of wellness. Learn the art of titration, which is a chemical term, but learn how to move. You know, I just had dental surgery over the last year. And one of my practices from both the Buddhist tradition and from neuroscience and resilience training is wherever there was pain in my body, find the part of my body that was not in pain, and then bring the energy from non-pain to where the pain is. So this is learning how to work with ourselves as energetic beings, not just thought. That for me is key. So I have a lot of thoughts, I've studied, blah, 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 but I know every thought is just that, just a thought. So I practice not trying to cling to recognize my thoughts, but not get carried away by my thoughts. And every day, one of the practices we do in all of our retreats is trying to teach people the skill and art of what's called resourcing, how you nourish your inner life. And two parts of that are really important. Know the people inside of your mind. Know the voices inside of your mind. And so that you can make a choice. Do I want to hear Uncle Henry today? Is Aunt Sally the voice I nearly need to be trusting at this moment? Is it, you know, I can go back through history and illustrate our political dilemmas around the world by the voices many of us are animated by that we don't even know. So learning to recognize your inner Sangha is another way to say that, and take care of your inner Sangha as well as your outer Sangha. We all need both, or we will be overwhelmed by the difficulties in our world. And resourcing our people and places and activities that bring you a sense of joy and a sense of wholeness and a sense of peace. And you can do all this at the same time you cry about the world. That's not separate. We lived in Taos, New Mexico, speaking of another location, years ago. And we got a rose bush and put it in front of our house. So the rose bush became one of my objects of meditation. And what I noticed was it could deconstruct itself and recreate itself at the same time. It's like, wow, can't we do that? Can't we let go and create at the same time? Can't we be that vast in our ecology of being human? And that's what we're being asked to do at this moment. And so that keeps me from losing my mind. And I'm out of time.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Larry. Thank you very much.
My wife just reminded me I'm out of time. Nothing like being married.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ward, for today. Sure. And Sangha, I know we've gone over, We didn't get to one of the questions, but we'll work on that. I do wish to just give everybody a chance to come on and say, if you have any final words, Dr. Ward, and if not, then maybe folks can come on and say goodbye to each other.
Well, I just want to mention again, we don't see the world how it is. We see the world how we are. And so working on how we are inside is revolutionary, because that's where societies come from, inside of us. Even though, you know, it looks like it was all set up before you were born, what was set up before you were born came out of the minds of humans. And so I have a mind, you have a mind, we can come up with all kinds of things. Let's do it. Let's learn to take up the vow of loving one another.
There you go.
Without regret. And this is Tashi.
Turn them on gallery so we can see everybody.
Yeah, we're ready for gallery view.
I don't know how to. Could you? Oh, that'd do it. There we go.
Hello, beloved one.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Oh, there's another.
Thank you. Let's do it.
Thank you.
Do it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Transformation.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take good care.
Bye.
You too.
There's another dog. Take good care of yourself.
Hey, so hang on a minute. Let me figure out how to stop this thing.
So this is all we need. What we're experiencing here today, quite apart from myself, is this experience is what we need from one another. And that is what will change the future.
Connection. Love to everyone. Thank you, everyone.
You. Be safe. Be well.
Be well.
You same.
You too. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Okay. Matt, I don't see your dog.
He's having a nap in the other room right now. Okay. I can go try to find him. It's good to see Tashi, though, and everyone else's dogs.
And if he can't do the stairs, he'll figure it out, right? Bye, everyone. Be well.
Bye.
Bye. Tashi's so cute.
Yes, he is. Oh, there's mom. Looks like a beautiful day in LA, huh?
It sure does.
It is.
Hope it's a beautiful day wherever you are.
There's Matt.
A beautiful day in the neighborhood, as Mr. Rogers always says.
Yes.
Oh, there he is, Matt's dog.
Oh, yeah.
There's Oscar.
Hi, Oscar.
Oscar.
Yeah.
Take care, everyone. Be well.
Thank you so much.
Be well and keep safe.
You too.